Let's start this morning with domestic politics because there's plenty going on. And this week, the political week will be dominated by the opposition's relentless pursuit of Environment Minister Peter Garrett and the Home Insulation Scheme. But the Rudd government also has troubles in the Senate, where its plan to wind back the private health insurance rebate for higher income earners could be voted down as early as this morning. Defeat of this bill will give the Prime Minister another trigger for a double dissolution election, which he may be tempted to pull in the second half of this year. Adding to the government's problems, though, the opposition yesterday voted in a way that's likely to delay debate on the emissions trading scheme until May. Independent Senator Nick Xenophon will line up with the coalition to block the bill, which would have saved the private health insurance means test bill, which would have saved taxpayers almost $1.9 billion. Senator Xenophon, welcome to breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Nick Xenophon, why won't you vote for the government's means test on the private health insurance rebate?
Well, for a number of reasons, and the biggest block for me is that at the last election, the Prime Minister, as opposition leader, said that he wouldn't be altering the rebate. And to me, promises are important. But I think one of the corrosive reasons why politicians are held in such low regard is that they can break promises so easily, the core and non-core promises. And I think it's important that the government doesn't have a mandate to change the rebate, that the consequence of changing the rebate could be quite significant in terms of the impact on the mix between the public and private health systems. As a result of the Medicare surcharge changing at the end of 2008, the Health Minister, Nicola Roxon, agreed to having a Productivity Commission inquiry into the mix between the two systems. That was handed down at the end of last year, and it found that there is a distinct lack of data collection between the states in terms of making the best decisions in the context of how the two systems work. So I think that it may well save the budget $1.9 billion, but the consequences could be that private health insurance premiums go up and we could end up having a higher waiting list in the public system. So it could be a zero-sum game.
All right, let me just break that down a bit. If your first concern is a broken promise, at the last election, of course, we didn't have a global financial crisis. That required some response from government, which included deep and urgent spending in response to the GFC. Some promises might need to be broken to start repairing the budget from that spending, mightn't they? Isn't that responsible, government?
Well, I think there are arguments. I think we did need that spending. There's a question about the quality of the spending and the extent of it, but I supported the stimulus package because I believe it was the right thing to do at the time. It seems that
we have to pay our debts.
And we need to pay our debts, but the concern is this, that in terms of the way that private and public systems are mixed in this country, and I think we've got a pretty good mix, there's a concern as a result of the information that's been put to me, not just by insurers, but I think the Productivity Commission, from my point of view, sounded some alarm bells when it said that there is a distinct lack of data collection from the states in terms of how the system works, in terms of the interaction between the two systems, that you need to have an evidence-based approach. I know that's one of the mantras of the Rudd government, and I think that's a good thing.
So basically you don't accept the Treasury modelling, which was tendered with this, as part of this bill, which suggests that there might be a switch of 1% of people out of private health insurance. You don't accept that figure?
Well, my concern with that figure is that, firstly, if there is a switch, if there is a switch of 1%, that doesn't sound too bad. But the concern is that you will end up seeing a much greater switch from people downgrading their health cover to getting rid of their ancillary cover. And I think that is a much higher risk in terms of that. You'll end up having a greater shift to the public system in terms of ancillary issues, in terms of extended health cover, people paying greater excesses and a whole range of related issues that I think will put pressure on the public system and will also have the effect of pushing up private health insurance premiums, which are under enormous pressure.
They seem to go up anyway. It doesn't matter what happens.
Exactly. And that is one of the conundrums that I think that one of the biggest budget pressures will be on the cost of care, the costs in our health system, both public and private. And one of the clear alarm bells in the Productivity Commission report, from my point of view, is that there is a distinct lack of information coming from the states in terms of their data collection. I think there was a hint in the Productivity Commission report that the states aren't providing the information that's necessary, that's requisite, in order to make some good public policy decisions, because, after all, it's the Commonwealth that picks up the bill.
Just in terms of that, I mean, there's plenty of health experts too who suggest that this whole rebate overall was never good public policy. But just in terms of the means testing on it, it is a pretty generous means test. Why should couples that earn $240,000 receive a 30% rebate on their private health insurance? They don't need it. Most people earning good money, decent money, will pay for private health insurance anyway. That's just a reality, isn't it?
Well, I guess that it's tiered, it drops off, from about $75,000, and it goes up. My concern is, what will the impact be, particularly on ancillary cover? And, Fran, it was a key promise of the Labor Party in opposition that they wouldn't touch the private health rebates. And I think that it's the sort of thing that if we have to have an election on that particular issue, then let the government get a fresh mandate in relation to that. But what's clear to me from, I think, a very comprehensive report from the Productivity Commission is that we just don't have the best information that we need to make the sorts of big policy decisions in terms of the contrasts and the efficiencies of the two systems.
Well, talking about a fresh mandate, what's your view? Is it your view that the Rudd government wants to get this bill through, or would it rather rack up a double dissolution trigger? How hard have you been lobbied for support on this?
Look, it's my view that I think the government definitely wants the savings, what it sees as savings.
The $1.9 billion.
Yes, I know, but I think that the issue there is, will consumers end up paying more for private health insurance premiums, and will we end up paying more in terms of racking up a bigger health bill, a public health bill, in terms of increased waiting lists, particularly in terms of people dropping off from ancillary cover? I think the government genuinely wants to get this through, but I also think that they acknowledge that this is a potential double.
Nick Xenophon, I just interrupted you there. You dropped out. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Now, you were saying there, can you just, you said it's your view that you think the government does definitely want this through?
Well, I think they want it through, but I think they also understand that this is probably a much more palatable double dissolution trigger than, say, the ETS.
And just on the ETS, I know I've read this morning that you've been lobbied this week by the government on the emissions trading scheme. Is this bill now going to be delayed until May? And if so, why? Isn't it rather urgent?
Well, I think it is. I don't support the government's ETS, but I also support the right of the government to bring this bill on. I voted with the government and the Greens last night in a procedural motion as to how the bills would be dealt with. That was defeated as a result of the Coalition and Senator Fielding voting together. The consequence of that is that it now becomes messier in terms of the way the bills are dealt with. Now, that procedural motion could be overturned. I still think that we could still deal with the bills, but it means that the bills are dealt with separately, as I understand it, rather than being dealt with as a whole. I would have thought, given the scrutiny that these bills had at the end of last year, that we didn't need to go through that whole process again.
You won't support the emissions trading scheme as it stands. What's the compromise the government's talking to you about?
Well, to put it in context, the Greens put to the government a $20 a ton carbon tax as an interim measure. I think there's been some talk as to whether that would be a lesser amount, and to be fair to the Greens, they've been entirely consistent on this all along. I feel comfortable that I still think that the best and most efficient way of tackling emissions is to have an emissions trading scheme, but it needs to be an efficient scheme and one that seeks to achieve a higher target, and that's why I quite unambiguously and pushing for the frontier model, which allows for an intensity-based model. It allows for much deeper cuts, and in my discussions as recently as just last night with economists from Frontier, you could achieve for about the same cost as the government's 5% cuts in terms of cost to the economy, cuts in the order of 15 to 20% using that model, and I think that model needs to get a fair hearing and a fair airing in the context of as a legitimate policy option.
Has the government come to you with any other alternative? Has it come to you with some variation, for instance, on the Greens plan, maybe a carbon price of as low as $5?
No, they haven't. And just to put it, again, to that in perspective, initially it was my view. I mused that if you had a low carbon price just to pay for some...
Hello, Senator Xenophon.
I'm still here, Frank.
Okay, sorry, you dropped out.
I live very close to Parliament, but I don't think the mobile coverage is very good here. But I think the situation is there that if you did have a marginal tax, it could be seen as a nuisance tax, and it wouldn't solve the problems of revenue churn that you would have with a carbon tax that doesn't look at an intensity-based model.
Okay. And just finally, I'm sure you've been observing the controversy, which has basically put an end to the home insulation program as we knew it. Should the minister, Peter Garrett, be sacked or resign, in your view?
Peter Garrett is a fundamentally decent person, but I just think that the only lifeline he has now is if the government agrees to a very full and independent inquiry, whether it's by the Auditor General's office to basically distinguish the political hyperbole in terms of what actually happened. Otherwise, I think his position is increasingly becoming very difficult.
Senator Xenophon, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Independent Senator Nick Xenophon joining us from Canberra.